We rarely examine our most closely held concepts. Every day we deal with issues involving family, business, technology, and morality, knowing that when we need to enlist a certain concept to help us answer life's questions, it will come forward from the unconscious mind. But are all of these concepts that we've stored and employ really reliable, accurate, and helpful? In the field of political science, for example, consider that prized concept of union, so passionately discussed, debated, and cherished during the turbulent birth of our nation. You probably still remember these famous words you once learned in elementary school. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Whether we care to admit it or not, our lives today remain deeply dependent on the existence of a viable political union. On the 4th of July, we remember the courage and sacrifices made by thousands of women and men to form a more perfect union. But do we have any meaningful understanding today of what that union actually is? We all know that some form of compassionately responsive union is essential for our shared experience of justice, tranquility, defense, welfare, and liberty. But how can we preserve and maintain it if we don't even know what the concept of union really means? In India, over 5,000 years ago, many people recognized the need to form a more perfect union, not just on a political level, but at every level of human endeavor. In fact, they treasured the concept of union so highly that they dedicated a great deal of their time and creative energy to examining and experimenting with it. Realizing that the primary motivation behind every desire is for union, they developed a science and a vocabulary that explained in detail how any person or any group of people who so desired could reliably experience union. In the ancient Sanskrit language, the word yoga means union, and the science of yoga is a system of intellectual, spiritual, and practical observation and experimentation that leads to the experience of union in every relationship. And here's how it works. First, yoga science posits that human beings become fulfilled by establishing union in their own lives. Second, yoga science acknowledges the profound connections between our thoughts, words, actions, and consequences. The law of karma simply states that thoughts lead to words and actions, which inevitably result in specific consequences. If you genuinely desire fulfillment in life, if you want to be happy, healthy, and secure, you must choose the thoughts to think, the words to speak, and the actions to take that will lead you to your intended goal of union. But that's easier said than done. If the truth be known, each of us lives enslaved to our own habit patterns of likes, dislikes, and concepts. Through conscious or unconscious decision-making, we continually create the software of the mind by what we choose to give our attention to and what we choose to withdraw our attention from. In other words, our habit patterns make us think the same things, say the same things, and do the same things, with few exceptions, every day. Too often, this process brings us more division than union. It is the mind and its unconscious limiting habits that is the real cause of physical, mental, and emotional dis-ease. Unless we can unite our outer actions with our own inner wisdom, we simply cannot see the possibilities available to us when an action is required. We tend to behave like racehorses that run around the track with blinkers on. We get around the track okay, and we might look successful, but in truth, we're leaving a universe of rewarding possibilities unobserved, unexplored, and unexperienced. Our minds become habituated to serving familiar and attractive thoughts, desires, emotions, and concepts. In the process, individual enslavement to fear, anger, and the self-will desires that conflict with our own inner wisdom cause physical and mental dis-ease or pain. Every cell, every individual organ, every bodily system, the cardiovascular, digestive, respiratory, neurological, and reproductive systems are all affected. That inner mental conflict of the individual is also reflected outwardly in the collective form of our political union. Between 150 BC and 400 AD, the sage Patanjali codified the ancient oral tradition of yoga science. The very first instruction of his Yoga Sutras states that all yoga, all union, begins with an understanding and coordination of the functions of the mind. His words were an introduction to a systematic regulation, a parenting, if you will, and mastering of the mind functions that lead to union. In yoga science, the wheel represents the human body, and the spokes of the wheel represent the four functions of the mind. No movement, speech, or action can occur through the body until there is movement in the four functions of the mind. The functions of the mind, you see, always move first, and then the body follows. The hub of the wheel is the eternal witness, or soul, and it represents our awareness or consciousness. It is self-existent and not dependent on the body or the mind for its existence. That hub, pure consciousness, itself never moves, but it is the cause and the power of the mind, and the mind ultimately animates the body. Once speech and action of the body takes place, consequences develop. The four functions of the mind, viewed as spokes of the wheel, are the manas, the active mind, the ahamkara, the ego, or the I-maker, that which separates us from our essential nature. Third, the chitta, the unconscious storehouse of impressions, or in Sanskrit known as samskaras. And our conscience, known in Sanskrit as buddhi, our discrimination. The word manas comes from the Sanskrit root man, which means mind. Manas operates both internally and externally. It is an importer and an exporter of information. As we relate to each thought, desire, emotion, and concept, we constantly face the decision of whether or not to take an action. Toward that end, the manas collects various bits of pertinent information from the external world and from the other functions of the mind. It organizes the data and presents it to our awareness. In order to collect information from the external world, the manas employs the five senses and sense organs: sight, through eyes, smell, through the nose, hearing, through the ears, taste, through the mouth, and touch, through the hands, feet, and skin. these employees are constantly going out into the material world and bringing back information about the multitude of objects with which there exists potential for a relationship. The knowledge from this perspective is always limited. The next function of the mind is ego, known as ahamkara, the I-maker. The manas also collects and organizes data from that ego. This information can be valid and useful, but its inherent bias of dividing everything into pleasant or unpleasant, good or bad, can be problematic. Left undisciplined, the unruly ego continually reinforces a human being's alienation from the experience of true union. Because the ego has only a limited perspective, it is often wrong, even though it is never in doubt. The next function of the mind is the unconscious portion, known as citta in Sanskrit. As the function of the mind, known as manas, debates whether or not to take an action, information retrieved from the unconscious portion of the mind, the citta, is added to the various suggestions of the ego and the senses. The citta is analogous to a computer's hard drive, a reservoir of all of our habit patterns, and the storehouse of information defined as useful in fulfilling our desires. The unconscious mind, like the senses and ego, operates from a rather limited perspective because many of its habits and concepts are in fact faulty. When the manas concludes its preliminary fact-finding through the senses, it presents two possible choices for consideration. Addressing our awareness, our consciousness, the manas begins by saying, you have two basic alternatives. There's alternative A, which will probably result in consequences 1, 2, 3, and 4. And there is alternative B, which will probably result in different consequences, 5, 6, 7, and 8. What is your decision? In support of which alternative will you take an action? After the manas concludes its monologue on alternatives and consequences, it waits a bit for our decision. Without a decision, the manas repeats again and again. You have two basic choices, A or B. Will you do it or will you not do it? You have two choices, A or B, A or B, A or B. The relentless repetition becomes first annoying, then frustrating, and eventually exhausting. The doubt and indecision play on like a broken record, and our inability or unwillingness to make a decision based on the available information is a major cause of stress that depresses both the mind and the body's immune system. The conscience of the mind, known as buddhi, is the only mind function that can discriminate and decide. Functioning like a mirror, the conscience of the mind has the capacity to reflect perfect wisdom from the superconscious portion of the mind. The superconscious mind lies beyond the conscious and unconscious minds. It is the same portion of the mind where Albert Einstein saw mathematical equations and Paul McCartney hears beautiful melodies. Of all the functions of the mind, the conscience alone has access to the inner wisdom that will know what is actually to be done and what is not to be done in every relationship. As yoga scientists, before we try to skillfully coordinate the functions of the mind in a personal experiment to experience the benefits of union, let's just step back a moment to review four important points. First, our nation's founders believed that forming a more perfect union was a vital requisite to experiencing justice, tranquility, defense, welfare, and liberty. Secondly, the law of karma states that consequences flow from our thoughts, words, and deeds. Third, Patanjali taught that all yoga, all union, begins with an understanding and coordination of all the four functions of the mind. And fourth, the conscience, known as buddhi, is the only function of the mind that can provide a faultless path to union by reflecting perfect wisdom from the superconscious portion of the mind. So if we honestly desire the benefits of union, we need to parent the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind to defer to the wise and the good counsel of our own conscience. Only when we skillfully coordinate the four mind functions in this manner can we transcend the painful limitations of the animal mind-body-sense complex and experience a more perfect union in every circumstance. In March 1775, a group of patriots convened at St. John's Church in Richmond, Virginia, to hear Patrick Henry urge his fellow citizens to choose the high road to union. Henry said, "They tell us that we are weak, unable to cope. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be next week or next year? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction, by lying supinely on our backs, hugging the delusive phantom of hope, until our enemies shall have bound us hand and foot?" "Sir," he said, "we are not weak, and if we make a proper use of those means which the God of nature has placed in our power, we shall know union." The truth is that the God of nature, Patrick Henry spoke of, has already provided us the means for union. By coordinating the functions of our individual minds, our personal bridge of yoga will not only unite our outer actions with our inner wisdom, it will breathe new life into our gridlock political union. Are we less patriotic today than those who walked the sacred land 240-some years ago? Are we not willing to commit our own mind, action, and speech to forming a more perfect union? And if not, at what cost? So remember, the key to union is the bridge of yoga. Yoga means union. It is a philosophical and scientific bridge that unites the inwardly directed feminine principle of inner wisdom with the outer worldly actions of the male principle. Through the daily practice of meditation, you can learn to skillfully construct, utilize, and maintain your own bridge of yoga in your own life. As you coordinate the four functions of your mind and utilize the bridge of yoga, the debilitating power of fear, anger, and self-will desires and faulty concepts can be transformed into expansive reserves of positive, healing energy, willpower, and creativity. Daily use of the bridge of yoga gives birth to the most perfect union of mind, body, and spirit. It can make it possible for you and our entire nation to experience the first great freedom, the freedom from fear pain, misery, and bondage. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you.